a real scrambling to try and keep the Pacers together. And finally, Dave Frick, who was that time for the Capital Improvements Board, and Jim Morris and I ended up calling on Herb and saying, we're out of prospects. This team is not going to stay in Indianapolis if it remains in its hands. And Herb said, I got to do this, huh? Then we pulled the deal together, but it was a tense moment. And as I mentioned, if we'd lost the Pacers, we probably wouldn't have been able to attract the Colts the next year.
I'm Blaine.
This is Jeff.
And this is Hidden Indy, the podcast that tells you the story of how Indianapolis came to be through stories you probably haven't heard. On this episode, you'll hear from Jim Morris, Greg Finnig, Ted Boehm, and Sid Weedman. Welcome to Hidden Indy. This is episode 3. I'm Blaine.
This is Jeff.
And yes, Herb, you do have to do this. Pacers are too important to the city to let them move or go away forever.
So thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks to the Simons, not only for the mall, but for the gift of professional basketball. The episode today is going to be about the Pacers, how important they were, how it fit into building up the city center, and us starting to host events because we're starting to get the facilities to really be able to do it, starting with the 1980 Final Four.
Absolutely. World-class facilities for world-class events.
A little history lesson here. The Pacers, 67 was the first year. ABA team. For those of you that don't know what the ABA is, it brought us the Pacers, the Spurs, the three-point shot.
A Will Ferrell movie.
Will Ferrell movie. The three-point shot was invented by the ABA. Slam dunk contest, also an ABA invention. Really, it was kind of the fun basketball league. And then there was like, but this is how we're supposed to play basketball. That was the NBA.
Yeah. Again, it's so hard to put yourself in these the mindset of the 60s and 70s, but
unless you lived in it,
but for us millennials,
yeah,
we should have like a
every time we say the Price is Right, it should be the every time we say millennials, it should be the Price is Right, dun, 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 dun. Or the Jeopardy timeout music, the burp, burp,
burp. Oh right, yeah. It's hard to put yourself in this mindset, but back then. You know, there were two quote-unquote professional basketball leagues. There were multiple football leagues. Like,
well, there weren't.
Yeah.
They tried, but it wasn't the U.S. Are you talking about the USFL?
Yeah.
You know who owned that? I'll give you a hint. He's the president.
Of the United States. No. I mean, like, back in the way back machine.
60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I think it was still the AFL and the NFL.
Right. Yeah. Before the Super Bowl era and all that. Like, yeah.
Back when championships didn't count.
Right.
Back when, well, you get this when you talk to Purdue fans.
Right.
Back when the NIT actually used to be more important than the NCAA championship. Mm-hmm. You remember, you know those people. Yeah. The people that don't have NCAA titles. Right. And so they justify it.
Right.
By being like, but the NIT used to be a big deal. Okay.
Yeah, but the thing to wrap your head around for us millennials is that, you know, in this era, the 60s and before, I mean, there were multiple professional leagues and organizations.
Yeah.
So the NBA hasn't always been the NBA.
It has been. So it was still way more powerful.
Sure.
The NBA had all the power, and they essentially used that power to make the ABA go away. But they realized people really like the style of play that's happening in the ABA. So we're going to kind of adopt that. We're going to bring four teams over. We'll only allow you to keep four, right? We were one of the four. So it was us. It was the Spurs, the Nuggets, and the Nets, the New York Nets, which are now... Which became the New Jersey Nets, which then became the Brooklyn Nets. I think they were the Brooklyn Jay-Z's for a minute. And then he was like, no, I want to be an agent. so I can't own this team. And they, oh, they were owned by a Russian mobster for a while too.
Wow.
Yeah, that's way off topic.
Yeah, this is not the Nets podcast.
The Pacers were playing successfully at the State Fairgrounds Coliseum. And at the end of the day, there were five ABA teams that wanted to come in the NBA. The NBA was only willing to take four. And essentially, the four teams agreed to share their future television revenue with the St. Louis owner, and he backed away. And I think the NBA wanted Indiana. We'd been a very successful on the court and financially ABA franchise. And they knew that Indiana was the heart of basketball in the country and how important the sport is. So that's how that happened.
Anyway, there were two other teams that took a buyout. The Spirits of St. Louis, fun fact, where Bob Costas got started his career. He was a play-by-play announcer for the Spirits of St. Louis.
That's fun.
And the Kentucky Colonels.
I'm sorry, what?
The Kentucky Colonels.
Colonials?
Colonels.
Oh.
Yeah, because like chicken.
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah.
Colonels.
Yeah. So those two teams are actually still
getting paid handsomely.
Yeah, yes. Which is insane.
Yeah, that article just came out a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah. It's just like the two biggest swindled contracts on the face of the earth are the fact that the families of the ABA owners of the Spirits and the Colonels are still being paid, and the I think it's Bobby Bonilla Mets contract, he's still to this day is getting $1 million a year from the Mets. He hasn't played since like 1993.
Wow.
He's a smart dude.
No end dates on those.
I'm pretty sure he's played since 1993, but it's been a minute. So we were able to keep the Pacers, you know, stayed in the NBA. But here's the problem. We were out at the fairgrounds, which
not seems necessarily weird. A problem.
Well,
it's a problem for Indianapolis.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, it wasn't necessarily a problem for the Pacers. It's just the fairgrounds, it's not like they're hard to get to or anything like that, but it's not downtown, right? IUPUI plays there now, so it's still, Pepsi Coliseum still has basketball
it's
court.
It's a nice
still,
building. It's just a weird environment.
And it's an odd location.
You like drive by the pigsty and then
you get like a big elephant ear and then you go sit down and watch some basketball.
Yeah.
So it was actually Richard Luger who was like, hey, we need to bring the Pacers downtown. Like, that was kind of his like brainchild. Mayor Hudnut kind of carried that torch for him.
But back in the 70s, when the Pacers were part of what was then the ABA, playing at the Coliseum, and we needed an arena as the Simons did their phone-a-thon to be able to raise money to be able to purchase the Pacers, Dick Luger, is my understanding, was adamant that Market Square Arena needed to be built downtown Indianapolis instead of out in the suburbs. Greg Fennig, Vice President, Public Affairs, Indianapolis Power and Light Company.
We knew we needed to move downtown, and we started the concept of building what became Market Square Arena, which is actually a pretty fascinating story, right?
Yeah, so we didn't create the concept, but a couple students from Ball State University did.
Chirp, chirp.
And I'm going to butcher their names, but I want to give them as much credit as possible because this is a very interesting turn of events. Joseph Meinier and Terry Pastorino.
That one you got right.
I think so, yeah.
Joseph Meinher.
There you go, yeah. So these two students selected downtown Indianapolis for what I hope was their final project, because it seems like a big deal. But every student got to pick something. There were like 20 to 26 projects for consideration. And they picked downtown. And furthermore, they picked what would eventually become Marcus Square Arena. So they designed this concept. And then the
but city, it was really just at the concept. It's they didn't design.
They're not Square the Arena. No. Yeah. They're not the architects. But
their concept was a building that went over Market Street.
Right.
Yeah. So we're imagining, for those of you that aren't familiar with downtown, there's Market Street. There's an actual market.
Mm-hmm. The city market. Yeah. And there's two parking garages on either side.
On either side. And they were like, what if we build a four-story office building over that?
Right.
Well, come to find out, the people of Indianapolis were like, hey, you know what we should do? Let's take that idea, but let's put a hamburger on top of it and make it a basketball arena.
Touche.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Terry Pastorino, it is important to say, actually ended up coming on and working on the project after his
at
college
the firm.
Career. Yeah,
right,
so he went to the firm Kennedy Brown and Trueblood. So apparently
before the Showtime.
It was a vampire firm. They only worked at night.
Well, you got to get people for the night shift. You got people for the day shift.
Yeah. So obviously the Pacers moved here to Market Square. It was also the host of lots of other things, right? So as we move through the 1980 Final Four was our first Final Four. We'll talk about that later in the episode. Hosted the basketball portion of the Pan Am Games, basketball portion of the National Sports Festival. There's been all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah, should we go chronological, notable events?
Oh, we can do that. We have to get back to the Pacers soon, but we can, let's jump on to
first event ever. Glenn Campbell concert, 1974.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis Presley performed his final,
live concert.
Yep. That's insane.
You didn't know that?
Yeah, but I mean, it's just like I feel like it's an asterisk on like Elvis Presley, but it's like huge for us, right?
Well, it was, he came to Indianapolis and he was like, well, I've now seen the best city.
Going out on top.
Yep, that's it for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I want to get through all of these.
I think you do, especially this next one.
Okay, Bee Gees.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because you can tell by the way they use their walk that they were in Indianapolis.
They were in 1979.
And there wasn't time to talk.
Billy Graham. Yep. Mm-hmm. Pat Benatar, 81.
Ooh. Motley Crue filmed their music video. Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That's insane.
That's great.
Yeah.
Ooh, Andre the Giant.
Yep, WWF Heavyweight Championship, 88. Michael Jackson, two consecutive sold-out shows. Again, 1988. Kiss, 92. Wayne Gretzky first skated out on the ice to start his pro hockey career.
Yep.
And then Jordan made his comeback from retirement, 95, first game.
I was at that game.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, my grandfather bought me tickets to that game for
Christmas.
Because
it was Michael Jordan, or just
I don't know.
I don't know that anyone
we
would
knew
have known
that he was coming back that game.
Yeah.
But I do, I mean, I remember we had very good seats and Michael Jordan was not very good.
Well, he'd taken a little time off.
Yeah.
The whole Space Jam thing and all right.
That's the one title he didn't win, was that 95 year. He lost to the Magic.
Huh.
He was also rusty.
But, rusty.
Yeah.
Should we get back to the Pacers?
Yeah, so Marcus Square Arena, big deal. We'll come back to it here in a minute. No, and I don't mean that dismissively. I said that dismissively.
That sounded
I don't mean
dismissively.
It was a big deal that we got it. And it was kind of like an architectural anomaly, right? Like, that's cool. We're playing basketball over nothing.
Over the street.
Yeah. Probably before we were super worried about terrorists. Because
it does seem like a big risk.
I mean, you just drive right up under it. That's how the first World Trade bombing happened.
In
Oklahoma City.
Yep.
We lived with it. The Pacers' first year being in the NBA, they had some really bad financial troubles. So every ABA team that moved to the NBA had to pay like $3.2 million as an entry fee. So they all faced financial difficulty, right?
Yeah, I mean, aside from the $3.2 million entry fee, The new NBA teams were barred from sharing the national TV revenues for 4 years. So they really kind of set them up to fail. Mm-hmm. Because that's kind of, I don't want to sound like a socialist, but the profit sharing that kind of make the league successful.
Well, and it was considerably different then too, right? So it wasn't even, I mean, the numbers weren't obviously as astronomical, but there were only two, three channels in general. They very rarely showed live NBA.
Right.
There's probably a lot of race elements to that. But
yeah, they weren't really fighting for the TV contracts like they are now.
Yeah, I mean, right. There were NBA finals in the 80s, the late 80s. Well, probably not the late 80s. There were NBA finals in the 80s that were tape delayed, though.
Right.
Like
right.
The Portland, I know for a fact, they won in 79, 77. Either way, it was late 70s, and no one saw the game live on TV.
Right.
The game that they clinched the championship, and Bill Walton was on that team. So it was a considerably different landscape. But when it's already a little bit amount of money,
right,
and these four teams aren't getting any of it.
And you had to pay to get in, mm-hmm. pay to play.
Yeah. So yeah. You paid $3 million to get into our league.
Right.
You can't make any money.
Right. For 4 years.
Profit sharing for 4 years.
Right.
Good luck.
Yeah.
So what did we do?
Telethon. Because why wouldn't you do that?
Exactly. Right? Because this was 1977. And in 1977, when you need money...
That's what you do, telethons.
Yeah, you do a telethon. Bill Eason couldn't get the bank to give him another loan. And Slick Leonard was like, it's cool, we'll go on TV. And we'll just have a telethon. We'll have people call in and vote. And it was just, how much can we raise and how important... is this to the city? How important is this team to the city? And right. We stepped up. We said it's very important.
And again, it goes to show, like, when given the opportunity, the citizens of Indianapolis will come together and support these teams, these events, these developments, basically.
Yeah, and they needed to sell at least 8,000 seats. To be able to save the Pacers and
for one more season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it wasn't a long-term plan.
But. Right. With like 2 hours left in the telethon, they were almost 1,500 short.
Yeah.
And then it's the famous Nancy Leonard, Slick Leonard's wife, coming up in tears because they had sold 8,020.
Right.
So they barely, they squeaked by. It was cool. And, it felt like, it almost felt like they won a title, even though the team was awful.
But, I mean, it was still big for the city.
It was a victory. Yeah. We weren't – the Pacers, their first 13 years, only had three winning seasons.
Yeah.
Like, it's – there's growing pains, right?
Right.
It's going to be like that.
Is it worth pointing out, too, that back in that day, people that owned NBA teams were not millionaires?
They also, in this case, didn't really care about the NBA team.
Well, there was that.
Yeah. But, I don't think that Eason was...
But, like, could you imagine Jerry Jones running a telethon today? How embarrassing that would be if he was like, I need to raise money.
No.
Right. Well, because he's a billionaire.
I'm like, literally trying to picture it.
Right.
I'm pretty sure Eason was still a millionaire.
He might have had some money, but still... The point was, like, this was an actual crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we, at the end of that season, we traded our best two players away. This isn't just going to be a Pacers podcast, by the way.
No, it's the Nets podcast.
That's right. Like, the point is, we as a city came together to save our basketball team because the basketball team was important to us. I think that says a lot about where sports landed on the what's important list and how impactful it is to the city, right? So we've got all the amateur sports stuff going on. We've got the sports corp, and we're saying, we care about the Pacers. And all the while, as we'll find out shortly, there were some people working in the background trying to get us a pro football team as well.
And what?
If the Pacers thing doesn't work out, probably not getting that pro football team.
No, I mean, it's clearly not a viable city for professional sports if we can't even keep the one we've got.
If we'd lost the Pacers, we probably wouldn't have been able to attract the Colts the next year.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're really in the early seasons, kind of the George McGinnis Pacers for the early seasons. He was just, he was really, really good. He was better than everyone else on the planet. He was kind of LeBron before LeBron. And this also was at a time, not the Pacers, but the NBA as a whole, wasn't the most popular thing on the planet. I mean, we kind of spoke to that a little bit when we were talking about the TV rights, that sometimes even the NBA finals were tape delayed. But it just, once again, race was a part of it. They thought it was too playground or whatever the case may be. It really, until Magic Johnson and Larry Bird came in the league, it just wasn't that popular of a sport, pro basketball.
Sure. Well, yeah, pro basketball.
Right. That's what I mean, professional basketball.
Yeah, I mean, basketball was, and especially to Indianapolis and Indiana.
So, time so comes.
We saved the team.
We saved the team. But then did we? We have an owner that's like, all right, I'm done.
This was stressful. I don't want to do another telethon.
I don't want to own this team anymore.
Yeah.
So they start trying to find someone to purchase it. Surprisingly, one of the things we found out was that Jerry Buss, who was the longtime owner of the Lakers, that's what everybody knows him as. He's the one that built the Forum, right? And he's the one that kind of created the Showtime Lakers tag. He owned Market Square.
Jerry Buss owned the hamburger, the stadium itself. And the stadium and the parking garages were owned by limited partnerships that had been put together by a bunch of businesses in town that all agreed to take an equity position in it. I think there were 32 of them that each contributed a significant amount of money. I don't now remember what it was, but maybe $100,000 or something, which is more money in 1979 than it was, or 75 than it was today, by a long shot.
Yeah.
The actual actual hamburger itself. So he didn't own either of the parking structures that it was built on. He right. just actually owned the building, the Market building. Square Arena.
The hamburger.
And he was offloading that asset. Eason was getting rid of the Pacers. We had to find someone to purchase them. And the Sports Corp, specifically Ted Boehm and Jim Morris, took it upon themselves to go find somebody to purchase the Pacers, not only to keep them in Indianapolis, but just to keep them as a team.
Right.
When the Pacers were in trouble in 1982 and 3, Jim Morris was at that time the president of the Lilly Endowment, and I was the president of the Sports Corp. We really wanted to salvage that basketball team.
Because we weren't talking a risk of like the Sonics moving to Oklahoma. We were talking like the Pacers go away forever.
Right. And luckily, their first choice bought them.
Yeah. So
the Simons.
Yeah. The very first person they wanted to buy them was Herb Simon.
That's the one.
And
his brother.
And his brother,
Mel
Gibson. And
Simon and Garfunkel buys them.
Herb Simon and Mel Garfunkel.
Yeah.
So the Simon brothers, they said, look, I like the Pacers. I think the Pacers are important. Go try to find somebody else. If you can't find anyone to buy the Pacers, we'll probably do it. So we went out and started whining and dining.
Yeah, we did our due diligence.
Yeah, it was really interesting, some of the people that we have talked to in this process, right?
We went all over the country trying to find somebody to buy the team. We talked to Dave Thomas of Wendy's, played golf with Dave Thomas in Florida, tried to get him to buy the team.
Yeah, so Dave Thomas, like, we were almost owned by Wendy's.
Yeah.
How crazy, and he's from Ohio.
Right, we could have had a new stadium that looked like
a hamburger owned by a guy who made his money from Square hamburgers.
Right.
It wouldn't even look like his.
I know.
But basketball would be fresh, never frozen.
That's right.
That would be Oh, man. Because then you know that it's actually, now that I think about it. So we first heard Ted tell us that Dave Thomas was one of the people that we tried to get to watch the or buy the Pacers, I was like, man, that sucks that we didn't get him to buy them, because that would have been cool. But now that I think about it, like, that would have totally gotten super corporate-y.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it would have been the Wendy's
Stadium.
Absolutely. But it would have been named after that, yeah.
Yeah.
And there would our cheerleaders would have probably all had to wear, like, red wigs.
Pigtails. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And all the food served would have been Wendy's.
Yeah.
Aramark wouldn't have had any of it.
Yeah. Hindsight's probably a good idea that we didn't get him.
Yeah.
However, we did go after Red McCombs, who is the owner of the Vikings now.
We talked to a guy named Red McCombs, who it subsequently bought the Minnesota Vikings, who at that time owned the San Antonio Spurs, and tried to get him interested one way or another.
Oh, yep. I don't know how that... I mean,
timeline on that. This isn't the Vikings podcast.
No, I know. I don't know how much that name rings a bell to anybody.
Sure.
I remember when Ted said it to us, I was like, oh, yeah, Red McCombs. Where do I know that from?
Right.
And then we talked to that guy down in San Antonio, which is interesting because it turns out he wasn't interested in buying the Pacers. He was actually interested in trying to get them to hire him.
We thought we were talking to Drassos about putting together the financing to buy the Pacers and keep them in Indianapolis. Well, it turned out what Drassos wanted to do for us was for us to hire him as a consultant for a modest fee of $2 million. So it was an unsuccessful trip to San Antonio, but we got to see a nice canal and gave us some ideas about Indianapolis's canal down the road.
Yeah, I don't know how that, like, what got lost in communication there, or if he did the old bait and switch, like, oh yeah, I want to buy a team. And then they come down there and he's like, well, how would you like to hire me instead to
You've
find someone to buy?
At a job interview? You've never been like, I'd like to buy your company, and then come in and be like, actually, I just want a job.
Will you hire me?
That's how I've gotten every job.
So I'm going to start doing that. That makes sense. I don't know why I've never thought of it until now.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah.
The other side effect of that, right, is they went down to try to talk this guy into buying the Pacers and ended up getting a bunch of really good ideas on what to do with the canal because of what the Riverwalk is. I've seen the Riverwalk.
Does it look like the...
It's similar, but there's more like storefronts on it.
Yeah.
It's like restaurants and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's the one downside to the canal we've got.
There's a burger joint.
On the end. Yeah, once you get... Yeah.
there's a gym in that apartment complex.
Yeah, that's nice too.
Those are the only two things that I know of on the
canal. Yeah, the State Museum side is pretty barren. Just like tunnels and...
State Museum side.
Yeah, it goes to the State Museum, and then the other side is IUPUI.
Oh, the IUPUI side where it has the canal
really
roundabout.
Nice. Yeah.
There's also... Is it the same canal that goes by Butler and the Art Museum? We're way off topic.
We are, but it's the same waterway, but it's not connected.
That's what I thought. Yeah. All right. So we had all these people. Clearly, they all said no, and we went back and...
Begged.
As to how we opened the episode.
Hats in hand.
Mr. Simon was like, I guess I have to do this, don't I?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the answer is yes, Herb. What if we would have gotten him along with 10 other people that were all like fiery personalities, and then we would have been owned by 11 Herbs and Spices.
Yep. Is that the joke that you were?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was trying to stay on the fast food thing, but we got them all out of it too.
We did. Although, I mean, he was already in the mall business.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, real estate.
Actually, this is kind of a, side note, personal story. So, cool story about Simon, actually. So, obviously, he's a mall mogul, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
He owns the mall here in town.
And that makes him a mogul.
And that big building that has his name on it.
Yeah.
So,
well, not just in town, in all of the towns.
Do you watch a lot of Pacers games, Jeff?
I do. I go to about half of them that are here.
Right. So, you're a season ticket holder. You've probably seen the Pacers' number one fan.
I sure have.
You know,
this is
about?
An interesting story.
Yeah. So this guy's name is Matt Asen. Asen. A-S-E-N. I'm not trying to say anything negative.
Yeah.
So for those of you that don't know who we're talking about, he's the guy that has the signs, that wears a hard hat and has a flamingo.
Yep.
And he sits underneath the basket.
The basket, yeah.
Yeah. He actually lives in Florida.
Yeah.
He's not from Indianapolis.
No, never, no ties at all.
Well, one major tie. He's friends with the Simons.
He became friends with the Simons.
Yes. So he owns a bunch of restaurants on Sanibel Island in Florida. I've been to most of them.
Yeah.
They're quite good. He had rescued a bunch of kittens, and this lady came to get one because he was giving them away.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, "Hey, do you like basketball?" And he was like, "Yeah.
Boy, do I.
Huge, yeah. Boy, howdy." Because she saw the picture of Julius Erving choking Larry Bird. And she was like, "Do you want to go to Atlanta tonight with my husband and watch the Pacers?" And he was like, "Oh, sure." and then
I don't know
it
who your
turned
husband
out,
is, but yes.
Yeah, it was turned out that was Diane Simon, the at the time husband of Herb. He sat next to him, brought his pink flamingo, because that's what you do when you meet. We go to Atlanta, so you're in South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You just up out of nowhere go meet some random person because you're giving a cat away.
Yeah,
naturally you bring your flamingo.
Well, yeah, it's a Florida landmark,
right?
Right.
And
he's like, "I want people to know I'm from Florida, even though I'm in Atlanta."
He became friends, basically. Mel, Herb's brother, saw him and was like, "Hey, I like that guy's energy. Bring that Pelican guy back for the next game." That's what he said.
Yeah.
Pelican guy.
Yeah.
And
he's like, "Wait, did we have a Pelican fan at the last game?"
So he ended up basically becoming the Pacers mascot.
Pacers super fan.
Yeah, super fan. And he's not from here. He comes to... I bet you he comes to half the games just like
he probably comes to more games than I do.
Yeah, and he flies in from Florida. Florida.
Yeah.
This guy's a wild dude. Like, he has a Cadillac that's painted like a cow, and he calls it a Cadillac.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
He also, in one of those restaurants in Florida, floor to ceiling of pictures with him and famous people.
Again, why wouldn't you?
Well, so when we interviewed Jim Morris in his office in the basement of Bankers Life Fieldhouse,
mm-hmm.
he had a picture with him in there.
Yeah.
And it's the same style of all those pictures. Because when we were walking out, I was like, "Hey,
that's the
Pelican
guy. I've
seen this picture before. It's the, you've got a picture of the Pelican guy." So that's the Pacers superfan. Let's get back. I think we're past the groundwork phase, right? I think that
we have a building.
We have pro sports. Downtown matters again.
Having that arena built downtown Indianapolis, being the central point for bringing everybody together, whether it was for college games or the Pacer games or our high school championships, it caused Indianapolis to be the center point for basketball, which is our heritage when it comes to sports.
Now this octopus has got several tentacles. It's got the sports aspect, and it's got the downtown, and it's got the image part. That's what are we going to do about the image?
We're going to start hosting some major events. So in our next episode, we're going to talk about that first major event we hosted, the National Sports Festival. Really, it was a testament to, can we put together a worldwide Olympic-style event, which this is national, but it was a test. Can we do it, right?
Right.
And that was really our jumping-off point to be like, we are an event city. These are the types of things that are all leading up to expanding the convention center, getting the Colts.
It was the beta.
It was our beta, getting the Pan Am Games, talking to Fidel Castro.
Yeah.
Join us next time as we talk about the National Sports Festival. We want to give a giant thank you to Doug Carr and the DK New Media Studio for hosting us and allowing us to record here in the studio.
Please follow us at Hidden Indie Pod on Twitter or facebook.com/HiddenIndiePod.
And if you have any questions or want to reach out to us at all, hit us up on email. It's hiddenindiepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.